Welcome, everybody. It is Elaine. It is Thursday, December 15th in the year 2016, which is blowing me away a little bit today. And it is 3 p.m. Thursday afternoon Eastern Time. It could be a different time where you are or when you're listening, but this is the 3 p.m. Thursday afternoon Eastern Time group. I see one more person has just joined us. Hi, Velma. How are you?
Hi, Elaine.
Let me get you checked in real quick. What group are you usually in, Velma?
Usually in PSS Tuesdays at 12.
Got it. Got you. Found you. Thank you. Great. Okay. Anybody else? Somebody else has just joined us as well. Who else is here from California?
Oh, this is Maya.
Hey, Maya.
Hi.
And this is your regular group, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find you. No, I don't have you on this group. It's MAIA, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. And yeah, that's my group, Thursday.
Yeah, I've got you down as usually being in the Wednesday 1 o'clock group.
Oh, that's my husband.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so got y'all. Okay. Anybody else? Are we good? I think we're good. So recording is on. Let's dive in because it's a phenomenal topic today. And even if you've heard it before, it never hurts to talk about managing triggers again and again and again for all of us. So let's do a quick start with check-ins, though, and do a check-in and figure out where people are, do a little taking aim, and then we'll move into managing triggers. So who wants to get us started? Or I'll assign people. Let's start with Amy. Amy, you want to do a check-in and maybe a celebration?
May I please go next?
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
Sherry, what about you?
My check-in is,
yep.
A lot of stress, I guess. You know, I've been working, my thing that I've been focusing on is managing my reaction, and mostly I'm doing well there, but my son got upset last night. I handled myself well, but he had friends over, and he probably, you know, of course he was involved, if not started it, I don't know, but the kids are all playing video games, and he reacted, and he threw the controller down. We have brick floors, and broke it, and so that was, like, the last big thing that happened, so that's really just been my focus. We handled it
so,
well.
So your celebration is that you handled your reactivity in the midst of of your son's overreaction.
Yes.
Ah, that's actually great. How old's your son?
10.
Awesome. Okay. Well done.
Yeah. Yay.
Who else?
I'll go.
Go for it.
Can you hear me?
I can. Is this Maya?
Oh, yes, it's Maya. Because it's very similar to what I just heard and what I wanted to talk about today. My son wants an Xbox for Christmas, and so we set up some systems and structures about he had to improve his grades and he wanted to lose a little weight. And then his grades haven't really improved, but he's tried really hard. So I guess, you know, the trigger is always talking about the Xbox, and every time we say no or, you know, you have to work a little harder, he gets really upset. And so last night I tried to come up with a plan where I was kind of meeting him halfway, like maybe you could get B's in two subjects and, you know, we could set up, like, you could join a gym. And so I guess I think I might have handled the trigger well, but he wasn't very happy with that solution. So we're still, like,
mm-hmm.
trying to figure it out.
Okay. So tell me what you feel like the celebration was. And I hear there's also a taking aim, and we'll get there. But what do you feel like the celebration was for you? Or is
that, you know, and I'm not sure, but I think that we can negotiate a little bit. Like, I can meet him where he is, I guess, because he is telling me he's trying really hard, and I know he is. So just accepting that and not being like, nope, you need to get all B's. Nope, you need to get all B's. Just, like, talking about it is the celebration.
Great. So celebrating sort of improved communication.
Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, right, negotiating, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll get back to some of the other pieces about it, because just an observation for you is that, you know, we have to be careful with things like try harder, because that's pretty abstract. And so we want to get really clear, what does it look like? What does it mean? And I love the idea of shifting from the grades to the process, because with these kids, we really want to focus on the process of learning, the process of studying. So it's a great redirection for you to be focusing on with him. And so if he had some ways to be able to say, I did this, and that means I was trying harder, then you can focus in on the success of it instead of only looking at the outcome of the grade.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's
okay.
Just kind of frustrating when you start off with all C's and you end up with all C's. So.
Well, but here's the thing. And how old is he?
13.
Okay. So he may have all C's, but if he has all C's and he's learning how to go through the process of learning how to learn or learning how to study, then that's what's going to set him up to get C's and B's next semester, right? If he is buying in and owning it and trying in a way that he didn't before, he still has to learn how to learn, but that buy-in will set him up for success in the future, especially if he gets some rewards for it. So we just have to remember to play the marathon game, not the sprint, right?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. We'll come back to it, but really the takeaway message for our kids is to remember that when we're putting systems and structures in place, we want to try whenever we can to focus on the process of what we're trying to get them to learn to do and not just the outcomes of it.
Okay.
Because, you know, they could fluke or luck their way through an A. But what we want them to do is to learn how to consistently do the work they need to do to get the A or the B.
Right. Okay.
Right. So process
mm-hmm.
over outcome, long term, will benefit these kids. And that's hard because the school system isn't designed that way, and we want to see results. But just remind yourself, process over outcome, and that's a great sort of foundation. So who else? Amy, what about you? Are you ready yet, or should we go to Vilma?
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm ready.
Go.
So checking in about the triggers.
Well, just sort of a check-in. Where are you now, or what would you like to celebrate this week?
Okay, I'll keep it simple. I'd like to celebrate that I actually managed to get my reminder thing set up on my phone, so an alarm actually went off 2 hours ago, and I didn't ignore it, and I'm on the call today.
Yay!
I really realize this sounds so simple, but apparently it hasn't been. So I think my celebration, maybe it doesn't have anything to do with my kid. It's totally that.
Or maybe it has everything to do with your kid, because for you to help him or her manage, you got to manage yourself, right?
Yeah, yes. And
that's
all my...
Awesome.
Everything I kept putting prior to this, I finally realized that nothing was ever going to, like, this, stopping whatever I'm doing, no matter what it is going to make everything better by starting to take this seriously. So
great.
That's my thing.
Awesome. And I hear the nodding heads on the call of people saying, yep. And the other thing I want to acknowledge is that the other thing you learn is that what sounds so simple sometimes isn't.
Right.
Right? And so that's the case for our kids, too, for us to remember that just because it sounds simple to just do it or just turn it in or whatever, doesn't mean that it is simple.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's the case for us and for them. So thank you. That's a great, great celebration. Vilma, what about you?
I would like to say one more thing.
Go ahead, Amy. Yeah, yeah.
So something that made a really big difference to me is I tend to think of you guys as like this big sort of entity that one person doesn't really get noticed. And both of you called me and individually to check in. And all of a sudden, I felt this, not an accountability or a guilt, which is normal for me having grown up Catholic, but really like, wait a second, I'm actually part of this. Like, they care. So thank you.
And I'm glad it helped, and I appreciate that. We are, you guys will all begin to notice, we have decided to start what we're calling a concierge program. and it's really just checking in with people, particularly if they haven't been at calls, but even if you have been on calls, just to make sure that you're getting what you need and to see how it's going. And because that's what our value structure is about, you know, making sure we're doing the best job we can in supporting you and helping you. We know you're here because you wouldn't have signed up for a monthly program for a year if you didn't want to do something different, right? But we know that it can be hard to do it and to get engaged and to figure it out. And so we want to make it work. So thank you. I really appreciate that. And I will be very excited to share it with Diane. So
good.
Okay. Thank you. Thelma, what about you? What are you celebrating this week?
I actually am celebrating what has turned out to be a long-term outcome of doing what you all advised, and it's like the caller before, Amy, whose name I conveniently misplaced. I have been focusing in on enabling my 19-year-old to work out the mechanics she needs for carrying out what she's motivated to do, which in her case is she wants to do well in school, in college, and she wants to go to classes, and she wants to study. And this semester, she's been doing more of that. She's been studying more, and she came up to me and said something this week, which was very reflective about how it's difficult for her to make quick changes in the way she does things, and she has to do them a little bit at a time, and she's figured out that the little bit of studying that she's been doing has made her feel better about taking tests, and so she was in a good mood. So for me, this is like, whoa, big time, you know, because I don't have to nag or anything, you know,
right.
It's just having focused ahead of time and planting some seeds of some ideas and just giving up.
Was the nagging working?
No, nagging never worked.
It wasn't working.
No. But I needed to learn how to do it differently, you know, how to get the ideas into her consciousness without it being nagging.
Yeah.
So
that's it. In a nutshell.
So that was just great because it's exam week and it's like she could be getting, she's getting mini triggers all week long, and the weeks before it was like major triggers, but then she pulled herself together. This can happen.
And she's managing exam week, not you.
Yeah.
That's huge. Congratulations. Yeah. Really huge.
Thank you.
Well,
congratulate all of you working on this and talking with you weekly to just get my own habits changed. You know, it's just, it's working.
Yeah.
It's working.
Thank you. Yep, it's working. I love it. Okay, couple more. And Andrea, how about you?
Hi. It's funny. I was just thinking that whenever I get on this call and you ask us, what are we celebrating? It's getting into habits. I don't often think about what I'm celebrating until you ask that question.
Yeah.
It's usually
and
okay,
that is why I ask the question.
And I keep thinking I have to get more into that habit of trying to think about that instead of, you know, always thinking about, okay, you know, what do we need to do? What have we done?
What's next? Yep.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that when you start celebrating more with your kids, it becomes not only infectious in a good way, but they'll start learning to celebrate them. I was just saying to Diane today, the best part of my middle kid went off to college this year. And the best part of it has been watching her learn to navigate her own self-advocacy and getting, you know, texts or messages from her saying, I'm so proud, I went to talk to my teacher about this, or I got, you know, even if it was I got an extension on it, it was because I got an extension on this because I was working on that, and I knew, you know, like to see her celebrating the success of self-advocating for herself has been, like, I just can't even put words to it, right?
Yeah.
And it starts with us celebrating what's going well for us and for them.
Yeah, yeah. So
So on that note, what do you want to celebrate this week?
Actually, I woke up this morning and I was just feeling totally overwhelmed. And I wasn't sure why. I think it's because I had this bad dream and then I woke up and I realized, oh, that's my life. Yeah, I think I had some kind of a dream about, you know, everything was just a mess, like somebody's room was a big mess, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but when I woke up, I thought, oh, that was a terrible dream, and then I kind of felt like, oh, you know, the house
maybe
is
wasn't a dream.
Yeah, it's not a dream. It's real. But the thing I'm celebrating is that I kind of tried to, you know, it triggered me, of course, and then I tried to stop myself from going into that downward spiral. I kind of just stood back, and instead of, like, kind of lashing out, and I tried to figure out what was going on. And so, and then I just did some things to kind of make myself feel better and get things, you know, a little bit under control, I guess. I did something to try to make me feel better.
That's so great. So you woke up triggered and you recognized it and you started and you stopped the process and you did a little self-care.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to come back to it because you really, you went through the process. Well done. And what's hard about that, but what's important about that, Andrea, is that some days you're going to wake up upset or triggered or scared, or, I mean, that's part of it. And to sort of see that as an opportunity to manage it instead of a freak out place, it's a huge shift.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I was able to do it, but.
Yeah.
It's not a natural habit.
No. Building a muscle, right? That's what we're doing here is we are trying to build the muscle and strengthen the muscle and practice and practice and practice until it does become a habit.
Right.
Yeah. So Pam, what about you? What do you want to celebrate?
Well, for me, you know, it's been, somebody said earlier, a marathon, and I think we're sort of coming to the end, I guess, of probably one of the first marathons in my 18-year-old daughter's life. And she got her, she finished school this year, and she got her results on Monday, and she actually did really well and finished in the top quarter, which is just amazing. And she's so proud of herself. But I think the most important thing for me is not the score that she got, but that, you know, about 3 or 4 months ago, she actually started to turn it around herself by deciding that she needed help and getting the help and then starting to manage her sleep and start exercising, and then, you know, taking, you know, I put the resources in front of her and she hadn't been using them. And then she then contacted her ADHD coach herself and set up sessions with her, and, you know, it was just so wonderful to see that. And then when she got a result, she was just so proud of herself. It was so good to see that, you know, no matter how hard something was, she was able to finish it, even though she didn't believe she could. Because, you know, 6 months ago, I thought she was going to drop out of school. And to see that not only did she finish, but she actually finished really well. And she finished because of actions that she took to actually make it happen. And at one point, I think it also gave her a glimpse of what she's capable of. Because she said to me at one point, she said, I wonder what I would have got if I'd actually done, you know, a bit more study, Mum. Or, you know, she says, Mum, I didn't actually do a lot of work. You know that, don't you? And, of course, I said, oh, really? Anyway, and I said, oh, sweetheart, just remember how many days that it was just so hard to get to school. She missed so much school. So, you know, I think it says to her, you know what, I'm more capable than I thought I was.
Well, and that's, I want people to hear that piece of it, because I don't, you know, she finished in the top 25%, and people can make a lot of assumptions about what that means. But when, to be really clear, this was a kid who not only 6 months ago we weren't sure if she was going to stay through, but who really was struggling just to get up and get to school every day. Sometimes just getting to school was a success for her. And that's a really important piece for all of us to hear, is that we forget that it's not just about doing all the work and getting all the A's and all of that, but for some kids, just attending or showing up or appearing is half their battle. And as you say, Pam, you made the resources available to her for a long time, but what shifted was helping her get to a point where she chose to use them.
That's right.
And that was, you helped her get to that point, right? That was the work that you did, and the conversations and the communication and shifting and everything, not to force her to use it, but to give her, to help her find her own motivation to use it.
Yep.
So, yay.
Yes.
So I want to make sure we get into our topic today, so I'm going to keep us moving forward. I think I got everybody. Did I get everybody? Okay, I think so. If I didn't, y'all will let me know. Please speak up. Maya, if you'll forgive me, I'm going to mute you occasionally, because there's still some sound on your line that tends to cause feedback. But if you want to say anything, please press star 2 to raise your hand, and I'll see it. And I'll unmute you when it's time for a conversation or to call on you. But forgive me, I don't know what it is about the line you call from, but there's always a little static on it. Okay, so let's move into taking aim. I want to ask us to bottom line it a little bit this week, just so that we have time to get into our topic. And if you need help having some coaching around what you're taking aim on, absolutely ask for it. That's fine. But if you have a sense of what it is, let's try to bottom line where we're taking aim today. So I'm going to start back with Sherry, if that's okay.
Okay. So what I want to take aim on?
Yep.
So you can help me, because a couple things are going on, of course. So everything's going on, but so lately, you know, I'm feeling semi-successful with managing my reactions, but I still see, and I am seeing with my son, a couple things. First, I've tried to change his breakfast so that he's not eating just cereal, so that he has something that's protein and really high in fat. Anyway, he kind of went with it unwillingly for a week or two, and now I'm getting
a lot of pressure. I'm going to interrupt you for a second to ask you to sort of really focus on what's the change you want to see.
Okay.
And if you want to come back, that's totally fine. But I want you, because there's a lot of information, and I don't want to ignore it. I just want to try to keep us moving. Is that fair?
Well, then I guess I'm not going to make that my important thing, because the change is as I'd like him to eat my breakfast. But he won't, and right now I'm like, fine, then just don't eat. So I'll make it how cruel he's being. And, you know, he will say, well, make me cereal. And I'll say, well, you know, this morning I did say, what's your problem? Which, of course, there's a different way I can handle that. But, and it's, of course, me. But there's a lot of cruel comments that he's been making lately. And when I don't react, eventually he will come around almost always and say, I'm sorry, Mom. And I'm not, you know, I really try to step away and don't do the shame or, you know, manipulating. I'm really trying to be aware of how I'm acting and not react and also not get the sorry out of him in some manipulative way. But he is just being mean, and he's saying a lot of mean things, and I don't want him to say mean things anymore. I think that would be my net, you know, just cruel stuff. And
so you want to take aim on helping raise his awareness or helping him shift. I used to say with my kids, there's a nice way and a not nice way, and to help him find the nice way to say things.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
A good way to put it.
Yeah. Okay. Who else?
Actually,
no,
I'm not
about you.
It's my...
Oh, Pam,
oh,
go
sorry.
For it. No, go. Good.
It's similar for me. You know, my daughter can just be so rude. And I want to take aim on, you know, stopping the rude comments, particularly towards her dad, but also towards me. Because it's just mean.
Okay. So same place, sort of finding a nice way to say things.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Okay. Who else? Anybody else in this line of it's not what they say, it's how they say it?
Yeah. This is Vilma, 19-year-old daughter. it's not so much that it's mean, but it's like over the top reacting, which gets on my nerves. So the trigger is like, oh, God, no, she did it again, you know, kind of like when I say something like, what time did you say you were leaving? I said, bam, you know, it gets very hyper on her part. Like, I should have known that.
Got it.
That triggers
okay.
me.
So you want, so is it, do you want to stop the dramatic reactivity over reactions, or you, is it about how you handle her drama?
Well, let's start with me handling the drama. Because the other will come after I handle it well.
Great.
Not before.
Okay, so shift how I'm handling her dramatic over-the-top reactions.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Great, and great awareness for you that that's where you are. Andrea, what about you?
Actually, I have the same thing with my 16-year-old daughter. When I try to, you know, ask her a question about something and then she just blows up or overreacts, and I have to take aim on learning how to better respond to that.
Okay, great. There's a nice, easy theme going on today, and it ties very well into our topic. So let's see who we're missing so we can dive in. Maya, I'm muting you. What about you?
Yeah, it's hard for me to join in if I'm muted all the time.
I'm sorry. I don't know what else to do.
Well, I think my phone is on a speakerphone, so I'll try taking it off, and maybe that's the problem.
That's probably what it is. Yeah, we're getting feedback from the speakerphone. That's exactly what it is. Maybe you could get a headset for it.
Okay.
Anyway,
can you hear me now?
Where would you like to take aim?
I would like to take aim on, well, what we were talking about before, the Xbox, just figuring out a process, I guess, for him to, work a little harder and just do some homework every night. He kind of tries to do it all at school and then doesn't want to do it at home.
So the change you want to see is him doing homework at night at home.
Yeah. And, you know, just like we were talking about, the whole process of studying for tests before and just, you know, changing, I guess, his approach to school.
So that's really big, changing his approach to school. And you can't really take aim on that in a call like this. I mean, you can do that in private coaching, but here you want to take aim on something a little more tactical and tangible so that you can begin to see some results. So doing homework nightly or setting an expectation or coming to agreement about what it's going to take to earn the Xbox, those are things that are tangible, right? So
right, okay.
One place.
Yeah, so we started to talk about it last night. I guess if he could, you know, go to tutoring twice a week.
You want him to go to tutoring twice a week?
Yeah, that he gets a lot done there.
Okay. Okay, so the change you want to see is to get him to go to tutoring twice a week.
Yes. Consistently.
Okay.
Like sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't.
So that for what purpose?
Well, so he gets, you know, his homework done.
Okay. So that you don't have to do it at home?
Yes.
Okay.
It seems to take three times as long here. I think he gets distracted a lot and, you know, at home he just and then he wants to argue and he wants to watch TV. And it seems like in 1 hour there, he just gets a lot more accomplished.
Okay. So, it sounds like it's a really good strategy to help him get things accomplished. What I guess I'm pushing a little bit on is, what's the goal you're trying to achieve? Is it you want to help him be successful in earning the Xbox? Is it you want to,
yeah.
I mean, like.
That's a good one.
This is. Well, because I don't want to take aim on a strategy. I want to take aim on the behavior change. And so are you hoping that going to tutoring twice a week will help him take ownership of his work, be more successful in his work? Like, what are you trying to achieve?
Yeah, we'll take ownership and work consistently. Like, he'll study right before a test, and then he'll, like, not do homework for a week, and I get all these emails from the teacher, and so he kind of, you know, he hurts himself. He says, I'm a smart kid who doesn't do homework, and he is smart. He does well on his tests, but he's not, like, you know, getting, now that this is high school and he has to work a little harder,
okay.
I guess maybe changing his study habits. I don't know.
So you want to improve his working consistently.
Yeah.
Right. You want him to improve that ability to be consistent in his work.
Yeah.
Okay. And one way to do that may be tutoring, but the tutoring is a strategy or a tactic, not necessarily the goal. Do you see that distinction?
Yeah, it's a way to get there, I guess.
Exactly. But the there is for him to be more sort of consistently, working more regularly and consistently instead of when there's something big going on, right?
Yeah, so you have this, you know, like the carrot or the motivation, but then, like, you know, it's just not consistent. Then he doesn't keep going.
Right. So let me sort of frame it for you, but I want to move on to make sure we get to the topic. But so if the goal is to help him earn an Xbox, for example, then you may set the expectation to do that may be we want to really see you improve consistently working instead of working off and on and off and on. And so the way to achieve that is we want to set the expectation that you're going to attend tutoring twice a week consistently for the next month in order to get the Xbox or whatever the time frame is. Do you see how it sort of steps down? So the tutoring twice a week becomes an accountability. You can measure, did he do it or did he not?
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to improve his work habits to be more consistent, and the bigger picture is so that he can be more successful in school. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. Okay, I think there's one more. Amy, what about you? Where are we taking aim today?
Okay. So I have a hunch this might be vague. Texting. My son just got his iPhone back after a year. And he also has his first girlfriend. So I, for the first time, am being exposed to what I've heard about, this insane texting all the time. And so, you know, I don't...
What's the change you want to see?
I want to see him learn to manage this. In other words, not do the texting throughout, like, the whole school day. And
okay, so be very specific, because learning to manage it is broad, but specifically is
right.
No texting during the school day, for example.
Okay.
That's something, that's a behavior you can set an expectation for changing.
Okay. So
that
I would
sense?
Think that, yeah. So I would say that the goal is, you know, once that first class bell goes off, there's no texting until lunchtime. And at lunchtime, fine. I mean, I don't know what's reasonable.
So no texting during class hours?
Yeah.
Except for
reasonable.
Lunch and after school?
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
I don't know what other people think, but.
Okay. No, it's going to be an individual thing for every family. But
Okay.
So I want to let's dive into today's topic. I don't think we're going to have time today to do a private, you know, a laser coaching on it, but let's see what I can sort of get through and what kind of conversation we can have. Most of you have heard this conversation before. It's not new to everyone. It's going to be somewhat new to some of you. And it's a topic we cover a couple of times throughout the year because it's so essential. So if you if it's new to you and you want more on it, there are definitely some webinars on this. There's more. You can go listen to old classes on it as well, other PSS classes, because as I say, this is a huge topic. And we're going to talk about managing triggers, and the process we use to do that is something we call the 4 steps to escape the stress cycle. So those are some other ways you can look up and get more information on this topic. But the big picture here is to understand and learn how to manage triggers, right? That's the concept. So triggers means, we've talked a lot today, and I think everybody on this call knows what we mean when we talk about being triggered. We get triggered, our kids get triggered, something happens that we react or our kids overreact to. And when we're triggered, what's happening actually is that we're not just getting angry or upset, we're actually getting, our brain is actually getting taken over by the amygdala, the primitive part of our brain. So when we get triggered, our body, when something happens that is upsetting or scary or frustrating, it's like the brain shifts from that frontal lobe that's really good thinking and reasoning, and the primitive brain takes over, the tiger is at the door, and we go into fight or flight. And oftentimes, a lot of the scenarios you're talking about, what's happening is when our kids are rude, for example, or when they overreact, they may be going into fight or flight. They may be going into this reactive stress cycle. And then if we're not careful, we follow right along and we go right with them. And now everybody's running from a tiger. And the primitive brain is in charge, and there's no rational reasoning, thinking brain that's involved. Right? So managing triggers is about shifting the process from that primitive brain being in charge to getting back into the frontal lobe. And I think I want to just go directly into the 4-step process. Does everybody have a sense of what I'm talking about in terms of triggers? Are there questions about it? Okay. One observation I want to make that came up the other day that I think was so poignant for a lot of people is to recognize that oftentimes what happens is that we get triggered by our kids getting triggered. So they overreact, they get upset, they get scared, they get defensive, and then that actually becomes a trigger for us. So recognizing what our triggers are can be really helpful and essential to beginning the process of calming down. So once we say we get into that process, then it's like, how do we calm ourselves down? How do we stay calm? Because if we're not calm, all we're going to do is escalate what's happening in the dynamic instead of learning, helping to teach them to calm themselves down and get themselves back into their frontal lobe. Because we're dealing with kids who are dealing with challenges of executive function, so their frontal lobe is already compromised. So it's really easy for their brains to jump into amygdala hijack, because that's a place where they can actually operate and know and get something done. That's why your son is likely doing things at the last minute and working erratically instead of consistently, because he's probably relying on the amygdala, the fight or flight part of the brain, to get himself to get something done. He's waiting for that deadline. He's waiting for the urgency, so he has to get it done, right? So we want to calm ourselves down and ultimately teach our kids how to calm themselves down so that they can use that reasoning part of their brain and strengthen it. So four-step process to escape the stress cycle is what we teach. And this is pretty common. You'll see this in mindfulness training and, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy. This is not original to impact or to coaching, but it's a framework that I think Diane and I have designed that I think works really well. So step one is to recognize that you're triggered in the first place. And this is, again, for us, and to begin to teach our kids to recognize when they're triggered as well. So it's to notice, like you were saying when you woke up, I think it was Andrea was saying when you woke up this morning and you had this bad dream, and you woke up and realized that you were triggered, right? To recognize that this isn't a normal state. This is a triggered state. I'm not operating from my reasoning brain. I'm a little freaked out right now. So recognizing that you're triggered in the first place can be really powerful. And there's an article on the site about a trigger journal. If this is a struggle for you, this part of it, then keeping a trigger journal for a few days can be really helpful, either for yourself or for your kids, to begin to see what your processes are, to see what your tendencies are. It can really help to learn to manage it. So step one is to recognize it in the first place. And when it's our kids who are freaking out, not us, sometimes it's as simple as saying, wow, you're really upset right now, or wow, it seems like you're really angry. To acknowledge and recognize for them and help them begin to recognize when they are getting triggered. You may not start by saying, you're really triggered right now and you need to calm down, because that's probably going to just trigger them further. But you can say, it seems like you're really upset, or it seems like you're feeling really triggered, or you must be really angry. Or, you know, and for several of you wanted to talk about this issue of how your kids are talking and reacting, or how they're overreacting, or finding a nice way. Oftentimes when our kids are reacting in that kind of an ugly, rude, negative way, often something else is going on with them, and they're actually in a triggered state and don't realize it. And so you become the punching bag, because you're there, and it's an outlet for them to actually try to reclaim their brain. Which brings us to step two. So step one is to recognize that you're triggered in the first place, and to help begin slowly to raise our kids' awareness to the fact to when they're getting triggered. Step two is to do what we call reclaim the brain from this triggered state. So if you're in amygdala hijack, your brain has been taken over, and you've got to get back to your frontal lobe in order to be able to think and reason and take action from a reasonable place. To do any kind of problem solving, you got to calm down first. And there are a lot of ways that we can reclaim our brain. So if you know you're getting triggered, you may have hair sticking up on the back of your neck, or sweaty palms, or palpitating heart, or you may have some physiological symptoms that you become aware of as you do your trigger journal. Or not. It may just be an emotional reaction that you're feeling. But once you recognize that, you want to begin to pay attention to what can you do to calm yourself down. What works for you? Do you take deep breaths and let them out slowly? Do you take a walk? Do you take a shower? Could you do wall push-ups? A lot of people, you can use water to help you calm down. What Diane taught me is that sucking water is like an animal at the watering hole. It sort of gives your brain the message that it's safe. And so water can really help calm down And no, coffee and tea do not do, sadly, the same thing as water. Neither does bourbon and wine, just saying. But water can really calm yourself down. And sometimes I tell people to get, you know, get a sports bottle that's got like a sucky top or something, because that's also calming and soothing. If calming yourself down is a big issue for you, that can be really helpful. So beginning to recognize what are the mechanisms that you use to calm yourself down, and taking the time to reclaim your brain, or to help your kids begin to learn how to reclaim theirs so that they can, you can move on to step three. So a couple other things about reclaiming the brain. One is it's got to be really reclaimed. Fake calm doesn't work. And probably many of you have had those situations where you have taken a couple of deep breaths and said, okay, and you're right back into it and you're no less triggered than you were before. Or when your kids have said, you've said, calm down, take a few deep breaths, they take a few deep breaths and they're ready to go right back at it, right? Or when, my husband and I laugh about this, but my husband is known for when my kid finally said, you say you're calm, but you are not calm. And the truth is he wasn't yelling, his voice was as calm as could be, but you could tell that he was seething, right? And so fake calm doesn't work. It's got to be real, authentic, reclaimed the brain from that triggered state. That's step two. I want to stop here before we move into step three and four, because I just want to make sure everybody's sort of with me on recognize that you're triggered and take the time to reclaim your brain from the trigger before you move on. Questions, thoughts?
It takes me a really long time to get back.
Yeah, it can. Great awareness, Vilma. And here's the thing. When you practice it over time, it will take you less and less time.
Yeah.
You'll begin to be able to do it more quickly. It's part of that muscle memory. But I love that you recognize that it takes time. And, yeah, it's hard, but you got to give it that time.
Mm. Okay.
And the biggest thing I usually hear from parents after that is, yeah, but we've got to get out the door. Yeah, but we've got to get this done. Right?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But if you're trying to get it done from a triggered state, how effective is that communication going to be?
Yeah.
If you're trying to get it done and you're rushing kids out the door, what are they going to do?
Oh, it would take even longer.
Right. They're going to slow down.
Yeah. And be wild and crazy.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to trigger. It's going to compound the trigger. Because once you're triggered, our kids are emotional sponges. They're going to get triggered. They're going to react to your reacting.
Yeah.
Does it help to talk through the process that you might be going through? Because I think of my daughter when she's, you know, when she's in a rant, and I've got much better at not reacting, but it's, you know, it's fake calm and she sees it for what it is. So, you know, and increasingly she just stares at my face. Oh, you've got that look on your face and what's wrong? And she just, you know, she just goads me, tries to goad me into a response. So, you
right.
know, most of the time I manage not to say anything, but sometimes being silent is the best I can do, but my face is giving it all away. So would it help to say, well, the reason I'm not talking is because I'm feeling upset and I just need a minute. Is that helpful? Or?
I think it is. I think it's really honest to be able to say, yeah, you know what, I'm really triggered too right now, so I'm just trying to stay calm. That may be a chance to say, why don't we take a couple of a break and let's come back to each other in a couple of minutes, because clearly if you're triggered and I'm triggered, now's not the best time to have this conversation. Give us a minute. Let's come back.
Yeah,
it's transparent. It's honest. It's real. And it's modeling for them a method of management, which is I am not going to engage when I'm triggered.
Yeah.
And you can have another conversation later with them about what you're doing and what you're thinking and what this process is and why it's important. right, to be able to say, you know, I've realized that when I'm triggered or you're triggered, whatever conversation we have isn't effective, so I'd like to agree that, you know, when someone calls a timeout or a break or a buster or whatever, that we take a break and we come back when we're calm, because I want to make sure we're having the best communication we can with each other.
Yeah.
But you don't do that in the moment. Because as soon as you say, you need to calm down, you're triggered, what's that going to do?
Oh, it's just going to trigger her more.
Exactly. But if you can own it and say, even that sometimes I have to confess, there are times where I've said I'm triggered when I'm not really. But when I know that they need the break and the only way they're going to get it is if I ask for it.
Yeah.
I need a minute. I'll be back in a minute. Right now, I just need a few minutes. Sorry, give me a minute. I throw me under the bus. Blame me for it, whatever. I don't really care if that's what's going to be to help improve the communication long term. It's worth it.
Yeah, I think a hard part is not to get like triggered when they're triggered. I think that's what happens
yep.
a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because my
Huge.
Son gets triggered like all the time. He just
yep.
can't control his emotions. And it's about eating, about homework, about, like, calling me names. And then I'm, you know, starting to walk away. I think I walk away a lot more now. But a lot of times just used to get drawn into it. And then we have, like, nightly dramas, you know.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, when you're not in the drama, to begin to raise their awareness to what's going on so that they can see what you're doing and you can begin to educate them to this whole notion that when your brain is triggered, when you're in a stressed out state, you got to get out of it before we can have any reasonable conversation. Now, sometimes when kids are triggered, they're using it to get away from something else that's even harder or scarier. Not consciously. It's not really manipulative as much as it sounds. It's just, I would rather be triggered and emotional right now than have to sit down and concentrate on my schoolwork, which scares me even more. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we were on a call the other day, and if you want to listen to another call on this, we had a great call on Wednesday, 3 p.m. this week on this topic. And what we realized is there was one person on the call who, I think it was on that call, may not have been. This kid was in a triggered state. Actually, it was a dad. This dad was in a triggered state all day, every day, because he hates his job. Now, I take it back. It was not on that call. It was another conversation I was having. But we realized that he was triggered all day, every day, and then he was coming home and angry at his family because he had lost his reserves because he was in a triggered state all day. So the strategy we worked out was for him to reclaim his brain after work before he walks into the house, because he was walking into the house in a triggered state.
Mm.
Right. So sometimes it's external forces that create it, but to recognize that some of our kids are triggered all day long,
mm.
right? Just being at school is enough to keep them in a triggered state, and that's a hard place for them to be. So we want to help them raise their awareness to it and begin to help them learn to manage it. So,
I've got a question.
Two more steps. Yeah, go ahead.
Hello, it's Joan here. I came in a bit late, so...
Wait, Joan, can I ask you to hold for a minute just because I want to get
sure.
through the...
Yep.
This, thank you, and feel free to stay on with me afterwards and I'll answer.
Okay.
The two more steps to the stress cycle, and again, I'm sorry we're sort of a little behind on today's call because we spent a lot of time in celebrations, which is a good thing. So truly, if you want to listen to this full conversation, or the second half of the call from the Wednesday 3 o'clock call yesterday, it was a really, really good conversation about it. But so the next two steps to escape the stress cycle, step one, recognize that you're stressed in the first place. And a lot of us skip that step, right? Step two is to reclaim your brain from it, and a lot of us skip that too. Step three is to recognize the story you're telling yourself and make up a new story that works for you. So oftentimes when we're triggered, And a lot of you guys are dealing with this issue of how your kids are talking to you, right? And so it's going to trigger you if the message you're telling yourself is, this kid's never going to be able to be in a relationship. I can't believe she's talking to me. How would anybody speak to their parent that way? You know, when you go to that place of she's a terrible person and she's never going to make it in life, or I'm a terrible parent that a kid would speak to me that way, or any variation of those themes, do those sort of resonate for people?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So those are the
yep.
messages we're sort of telling ourselves that we don't realize we're telling ourselves. And they're not serving us. They're not helping us move forward in the conversation. They're keeping us stuck in this triggered place. And the actions that are possible for us from here are limited. So step three is to make up a new story that actually works for you, something that you could believe that's also possible, that could be true, but that actually helps you to think about it that way. So instead of, I can't believe this kid's talking to me again, right, you could, the message you tell yourself might be, wow, she's really upset and is having a hard time being respectful right now. Or she is so nervous and anxious that she's taken it out on me and I'm a safe place for her. Or, you know, there's a nice way and a not nice way. And I wonder if he knows that the way he says that is not so nice. All of those are things that could also be true, right? And when you come from that message to yourself, what's different in terms of outcome or possibility or action?
You feel more calm.
Mm-hmm.
So that
yep.
you can think rationally.
Yeah. It
and,
keeps,
you know,
yeah, you've reclaimed your brain, and if you make up a story that works for you, it keeps your brain in that frontal lobe. It keeps you calm, right? What else do you notice?
Well,
you can have compassion for them they're at.
You have compassion, yep. What else? Somebody else was saying something.
Yeah, I was
let's not
say,
catastrophize.
Yeah.
Yep, you won't catastrophize. What else?
I was thinking that you can actually see what the real issue is.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives you a whole different access to problem solve, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you can see what the real issue is and you're coming from a place of compassion and you're able to stay calm, instead of saying, don't talk to me that way, young lady, right, what's possible for your action or reaction from there? What could you do differently? Just one thing you might do differently as a result of thinking about it differently.
Soothing.
Say it again.
Soothing. Soothing.
Yep, you could go to a soothing.
Yeah.
Yep, great. What else? So what other action is possible if you say to yourself, he's really having a hard time being respectful right now? Let's just use that example. What action could that lead you to that would be different?
Oh, an actual conversation.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, it makes
yeah.
me, it would make me want to give him a hug rather than give him a whack. Like changes.
Great way to put it.
Sometimes I just feel
right.
like waffling this child.
This is when you pull
like,
in.
Oh
this
goodness.
Is when you go in. This is when you go into ACE, right? Acknowledge mm-hmm. compassion and then explore your options, right? Mm-hmm. It gives you that access to acknowledge what their experience is mm-hmm. and have compassion for it. Wow, mm-hmm. you are really upset right now. I'm so sorry. What's going on with you? Do you want to talk about it? Do you need a hug?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It shifts everything.
Mm-hmm.
The action that's possible, step four, is to take action based on the new story. And what I love about coaching that's so incredibly effective is that when you shift your perspective, you actually change the outcomes that come from it. And that's ultimately what this process is about. shifting your perspective.
And also, I think it protects me from doing harm to my son, because I've been known to actually say things like, if I was your wife, I'd divorce you for speaking to me like that. And like my whole thing is he'll never, nobody will ever want to be in a relationship with him because he's so awful. And the only reason I'm still here is because I'm your mother and I have to be. And I've said that out loud. And I feel ashamed because I've spoken these horrible words to my beautiful boy, you know. But what it does, like, you know, I just go, oh, he's actually having a lot of trouble being polite. Then I'll just go, actually, this is just, I know he can be very beautiful and polite and he's not really meaning the things he's saying.
Right.
So,
instead of saying, you horrible, that's so horrible for you to say, you can say, ouch, I know that is not what you mean to say to me. And I know that's not who you are. I know something must be going on because that's not how you mean to talk to me or whatever it is. But as you say, it gives you a different access for action.
Yeah.
So, just in the interest of time, because we're a little over time and I want to be respectful of everybody's time, and I'm sorry we haven't gotten into a full discussion in this part of the call. I feel like we had a really good one earlier in the conversation today. But I do want to help you leave with some takeaways. So let's look at the final four and answer for yourself the questions, sort of what was I paying attention to today? And what are my ahas? What am I taking away from today? And then if anything, what action do you want to commit to? And how can you help yourself be successful with that? And just again, in the interest of time, I'm going to ask for bottom lining it today of sort of what's the bottom line? What's your takeaway or your aha? And is there a single action you want to commit to? Anybody who wants to share?
I'll go. This is Maya. So I think the goal we talked about was improving the work habits. The takeaway would be the process over the outcome, or I guess my aha is not focus so much on the grades, but just focus on getting him, like, studying consistently, going to the tutor, whatever way we can get to do that. And then the take action, well, I'm still trying to figure out, he really wanted that Xbox by Christmas, so I guess maybe I have to figure that out, but I have definitely seen his, working more consistently because he's got this goal, but he's, hasn't really achieved what we wanted him to achieve.
So here's what I would offer, Maya, is that it's a great opportunity to go back to him and say, I realize that maybe the way we set that goal wasn't helping you be successful with it. And the truth is we are seeing that you've been more consistent and you are trying harder. So let him tell you where he feels like he's been successful. Let him identify and celebrate and tell you what he feels like he's done well. And then you guys can decide either what else you might expect or whether that's good enough or whatever. But I think it's perfectly reasonable to go back to him and say, we realize it's more important that you learn the process of learning than the grade. What do you feel like you've done well?
Mm-hmm.
Great opportunity to bring in that celebration conversation we talked about at the beginning as well.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Who else? What other ahas or commitments to action?
For me, the big aha is that I have to recognize the story I'm telling myself, which is feel sorry for myself story, And I have to make up a new one and going in the direction of ACE. Wow, you're really anxious right now. I know that's a fact. I know that's why she lets us out, Will going in that direction by saying, hey, I'm sorry, give me a minute and we can get back to this, is going to help me change this, give myself enough time to change the story in my head and catch up with the more rational.
Well, and I love that. It's give yourself enough time. And for you especially, you were saying this takes time, right? And so remember, it does. It takes time.
But to say it out loud as a commitment to her and to me that I'm taking time, I think will shorten things, you know, rather than stewing on it.
Yep. Love it. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Who else? Yep. No, it's a process, babe. One step at a time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anybody else? Any other?
This is Amy.
I think we made it. Sorry.
Amy and then Pam.
Okay, just quick. Considering that he might be triggering all day is very interesting to me. So I might make it a goal, and I don't, not to be negative, but always ask myself, but that curious thing that you guys talk about, kind of always make that my first question. Is he triggered? Because I think sometimes my son, his triggers are, he hides the symptoms, I think.
Yeah.
Or not the symptoms, but you know what I'm, behavior
can
manifest a little differently. So I think that that's definitely something, what I will do is always ask myself first question.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the how's he doing? Check in with that emotional space. Love that. Thank you. Who else?
Yeah.
Pam.
I think I want to focus on, you know, not doing the fake calm, really. So what does that mean? So, you know, not reacting to her has been a good first, well, not sort of verbally reacting to her, I should say, has been good for stopping things from escalating. But I really want to try and be more constructive, and I need to work on that fake calm. So I think I need to probably observe myself and try and find some ways and find the right way to engage her in a sort of the right words to say when she's in that state that don't trigger her further. I haven't found anything
great
that doesn't make things worse.
Yeah. Well, it's a great place to look is to see whether you're keeping her, whether your fake calm is actually giving her that stimulation to stay triggered.
I think, yeah, and I think it might be. Yeah.
Great. That's brilliant. Who else? Sherry, Maya, or Andrea? Anybody else? And then Joan. We'll stay on for a second.
This is Sherry, and I'm going to repeat two things that stuck with me, one of which I wrote down on a paper at the house. I wrote something else I can't remember since I've left, but the process, not the outcome. I always want to write, and that's why I wrote it down, so I knew I'd forget. But the process, not the outcome. I want to remember that all the time. And then that trigger, the all day thing, because I think about that sometimes and I forget. And really, you know, in part of my mind, I think, oh my God, you're making excuses, but really I'm not. I'm trying to paint a picture of his day, and there's a big hole in the day that I don't know what goes on. And, you know, when he broke the controller last night, I'm not excusing it. There'll be consequences, but I don't know what happened, and I did get an email from his teacher this morning when I asked him about something else that he had a horrible day, and he was arguing and whining, and it was the one of his four teachers that he consistently has conflict with. So, you know, I don't know what happened, and it can't, you know, it can come out sideways, and he's not one to jump in the car and say, so-and-so was a butthead today, you know. I don't know about what goes on. He wants to be friends with people. He's super social, so that's not going to be the first thing that he says. And, you know, they're ADHD. They miss social cues. You know, he could be doing a lot of things.
At 10 years old, he's going to struggle with his frustration tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? At the end of the day, he's done. Yeah. Great.
Right.
Yep.
I like the topic.
Awesome. Anybody else before we wrap it up? Because I know we're well over time, and I want to honor everyone's time, but thank you all for sticking with us. Maya or Andrea, before we close, anything else you want to add?
This is Andrea, and I don't know, every point, each of the four steps, it was, I had an aha, I think, pretty much what the other caller said, but I what I need to focus on is trying to recognize what the story is, the messages that I'm telling myself.
Right.
And just recognizing that, I'm telling myself this, and then I'll be able to try to think of
Andrew,
another
story. Did you ever do Sanity School?
No.
Oh, okay. It may be because there's an exercise in Sanity School that actually walks you through this, that process of the thoughts and the feelings behind it. Let me see. Send me an email because you've been doing this long enough where some people I would say if you haven't done Sanity School, you probably should, but you've been doing this long enough where send me an email and I'll see if I can find it for you and get it to you. Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep. Sherry, was there anything? No, you already did. So it was Maya. And Maya, you did too. So I think we're good. Excellent. Thank you all for your commitment to each other and to yourselves and to your families and your kids and for sticking with us when we went overtime on the call today. But I really appreciated and enjoyed the conversation, and I hope it was helpful. I'm sorry I sort of had to rush through. There is a ton of content around this issue of managing triggers. Again, we will be talking about it throughout the year. This is not the last chance. And there are some good webinars on it. So if you type in trigger on the website, you'll get all sorts of good stuff. Or if you go into the webinars, there's Diane's done one and on stress management. We often talk about it in terms of either managing triggers or escaping the stress cycle. So if you want to sort of pursue it, say it again.
That's on your website, your Impact ADHD website?
Yeah, on the Impact website. Or specifically, if you want to look at webinars, those are only available to you guys as members on the members section, on the members site.
Okay.
And on that note, I'm going to say next week there is one more Lifeline call, and then we're off for the rest of the holiday. And I hope everybody has a wonderful holiday season. Our next PSS calls will come back in January, and so we will talk to you then, and we will see you on the forum in the meantime. Take care, everyone. Be well. And Joan,
okay,
if you want to hang out. Joan,
okay.
Are you still here?